He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
James, the lateral.
Chris Davis takes it at the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to the ACC American Athletic Conference preview episode of the Walk On Redshirts. We are officially close to a maybe college football season. We'll get into that a little bit more with the news. We still so many things up in the air on a day by day basis here in the college football world. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing?
Playing a lot of golf. Gotta stay busy. I'm kind of boring with nothing open.
Yeah, I'm back to work. Great times.
Fantastic.
My new favorite trend on the internet right now is the describe whatever in the most boring way possible and try to guess what the gamer is or what the play is, because some people put zero context whatsoever. Like the describe your favorite Big Ten play the most boring way possible, because mine's Jalen watch Jackson. You know, well, he has trouble with the snap. Even though it cost Ohio State potentially a national title with that play.
It's still fun to watch Michigan be sad.
That's true. Against Michigan State, at least. It's a shame it cost your team a national championship, you poor thing.
I know. If they don't do that, then Michigan State doesn't get the tiebreaker, and Ohio State probably still runs over Michigan, you know, by 30 points once again. And I don't know who they would have played in the Big Ten West that year, but probably a team they also would have crushed. And then they would have made it to the playoff, and then they were still the most talented team that year.
My favorite Big Ten play is running back runs for 2 yards.
That's every play ever.
Exactly. That's why it's my favorite Big Ten play.
that's the first play of every Big Ten game.
Well, I mean, unless it's Wisconsin, then it's running back runs for 6 yards.
Also true.
But yeah, I mean, if we're talking about our favorite Big Ten play, that's being as broad as possible. And I'm sure somebody would guess 10 different plays of significance over the course of the Big Ten, but it would be none of them in particular.
It's second and four because somehow they got a couple extra yards and then they run for 2 yards and get to third and two.
Fair.
Great play. So iconic.
What about you, Gibb? What's your favorite Big Ten play? I don't know why we're talking about this on the ACC episode, but why don't we go ahead and wrap
that's just
up.
The one I saw last night.
I mean, you can never go wrong with quarterback decides to keep or run the ball or keep or hand the ball off. And
the JT Barrett dive.
Goes for 2 yards every play.
Yeah. My least favorite Big Ten play while we're on the subject is quarterback runs for it on fourth down, doesn't make the line the gain, but the refs give it to him anyway.
Which play is that? Because I only know about the one that he got the first down.
But he didn't though. Like that's the thing.
Pretty sure he did. But
we're talking specifically JT Barrett. The play that Aaron is talking about does not exist.
Blindly following the refs, you guys.
Can I say that I'm very happy that I don't have to witness that play ever again in life? Because the amount of times I've gone through horror, you know, nightmares of empty backfield, JT Barrett motions the tight end in. And then he runs out the middle and somehow he gets like 6 yards. And I'm looking at the defense like, how do you guys not know this is coming? He does this every three plays. You just load the box because you know he's not throwing. And if he is, he doesn't have a good arm. I'm just happy that play doesn't exist anymore for Ohio State.
As much as I love JT Barrett, I'm also very glad he's not there anymore until he comes back next year as a 10th year senior.
He's still got 2 years of eligibility left, I'm pretty sure.
Perfect.
Also, Sheets is coming to Columbus, Ohio, and I'm pretty hype about that.
Talk long enough.
I know. We've got three coming, but it's still going to be a couple, little longer. And I'm sure it's going to be delayed, you know, with Rona and everything.
Yeah, that tends to be what happens. All right, Gilbert, why don't you kick us in the news here? There's some pretty important things to talk about.
Yeah, we'll start off with essentially the biggest news coming out here. As most of you have probably seen, the Ivy League decided to cancel all fall sports for this upcoming season. That includes football. And that was soon followed by the Pac-12 and Big Ten both announcing that they're going to conference-only schedules. The Pac-12 has said they're going to be delaying the start of their seasons due to concerns that USC and UCLA would not be ready to play in early September. The ACC and Big 12 haven't officially announced anything yet. They're planning to wait until the end of the month to make an official ruling. However, the ACC has already stated that the start of their season has been delayed to September 1st. That doesn't really have any effect on their football program because their first game, I believe, for the conference is September 2nd. But it mostly affects soccer and field hockey teams. The SEC is also expected to wait until the end of July, but hasn't had anything official from them yet. So, conference only. That's the way we're going.
My favorite was Alabama saying that they were still planning to play USC, but USC was going to play conference only.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
It was like, you do know the other team has to show up to play, right?
No. If they don't show up, then they get a forfeit.
I mean, on a technicality, I guess you could.
I'm sure Alabama would try to claim that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only Alabama would do that right now.
We won. They didn't show up. We won by forfeit. Gosh, that's such an SEC thing to do.
Literally getting on the plane and getting off the plane, then getting right back on a half hour later when the other team's not there.
Alabama would show up to the coin flip and be like, well, they didn't show up. I guess we win.
They show up in street clothes for the coin toss. And that's it.
But yeah, I mean, the Ivy League, one doesn't surprise me. They were the first one to pull the plug on the basketball tournaments earlier this year, and they kind of got shit on for that, even though they made the right call and everybody kind of followed not long after that. Also, I mean, their players aren't under scholarship. They are basically only loosely attached to the NCAA in the sense that they don't play in the, division or FCS football championships. They're basically their own league to an extent, so it's not surprising to see them move there. They don't make money essentially off football. It's basically just a side thing. So I'm not super surprised about that. Obviously, if it's not of the utmost importance, they're just going to move it as far back as they can without seeing any real ramifications on canceling the season, and then if they need to, they can later on. As for the Big Ten and the Pac-12, certainly an understandable move on both of their parts. I side a bit more with the ACC, Big 12, and the SEC on waiting it out until the end of July here to make that call. I think right now, with Swofford and the ACC, I know they've put in several different plans in place for what they need to do. So as long as they have a plan in place to cut that to ACC only, which they more than likely will, but at least giving you a little bit of time. I don't think this is a decision that has to be made right now. But as long as they have plans in place and people are in talks with other conferences and stuff like that to figure out what's going on. Cause I think that's the big thing here is, obviously, there's a lack of leadership on the NCAA level. But
shocking.
I mean, this is where college football hurts the most from where an NFL or an MLB or NBA or them. There's not a central organization helping here. It's a free-for-all on conferences. And I don't think you're seeing conferences necessarily work together as much as they should be necessarily to try and figure out how they want to go about this. Now you have these teams and the other ones kind of not necessarily scrambling, but they will likely have to at least succumb to conference only schedules unless they can fix a few holes in their schedules going forward. Like you said, Gibble, the ACC halted some sports until the beginning of September. Obviously, it doesn't affect them. Just mainly the Olympic sports. But we'll see where they go. I do expect them to probably switch over. Obviously, this has huge ramifications for like the MAC, who's going to lose quite a bit of paydays going forward from the Big Ten, and so on and so forth. But we'll kind of keep an eye on these as the other three decide on what they're going to do. I do think that we are going to see modified schedules from what they already have. An example of this, when I was looking through the ACC schedules yesterday, one of the big things being that you could see Miami plays Pitt this year. I could see them canceling that and giving Miami Clemson, who's in South Carolina, canceling Boston College and Clemson, and then moving Boston College playing Pitt as a closer one and Clemson and Miami as closer games or something along those lines. But we'll kind of see and keep an eye on that as it moves forward.
One interesting thing that I just read, because apparently it just happened, is Dartmouth offensive lineman Zach Samarino entered the portal. He's a grad transfer and hasn't given up a sack in over 1,200 snaps. So you could look at that as him trying to potentially get to a Power 5 school or at least an FBS school, because they're going to play this if they play this fall. That he'd be looking to get somewhere. He also could just be looking to get to a higher school, but with the Ivy League canceling, it might be a decision where he's looking to play this fall, because since he hasn't got up a snap, he probably has NFL aspirations.
Yeah, kid sounds pretty good. So he definitely needs to be somewhere else where he can actually play.
And I think we should also say the Ivy League hasn't said that they're moving to the spring. They canceled for the fall. There's speculation they'll look to the spring, but that hasn't been anything official yet.
Right. And I think we've heard a little bit that's one of the possibilities that they're looking at beyond if they have to essentially cancel the rest of college football. They're talking about the spring, but as of now, it's still slated to happen this fall with modified schedules and everything. Moving on a little bit here, Ohio State, Maryland, and UNC all had to halt their voluntary workouts after some positive coronavirus tests. NC State, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, they all also had positive tests at their universities with football players specifically. Stanford is cutting 11 varsity sports due to the ongoing financial ramifications of coronavirus. The 11 sports that are going to be discontinued are men and women's fencing, field hockey, rowing, lightweight rowing, a couple different kinds of rowing, sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, volleyball, and wrestling. So they're still going to have a football program, but some of the smaller sports are not going to be happening for Stanford going, or at least for a little while.
And you can, go ahead.
I was going to say, along those lines, we're seeing pay cuts now coming to Florida State. Head coach Mike Norvell is taking a 20% or 25% pay cut, along with other coaches and their athletic director, David Corbin, also taking pay cuts. So you're starting to see more financial hits around the universities and things like that. But
and the Stanford thing is should be an eye opener for people, because Stanford is like the best university in terms of all around sports. You know, soccer, baseball, football, they're good at volleyball. You name it. I mean, they're like the D1 all over champion. I forget what they call it this past year. So to see them cut 11 varsity sports is quite a big deal going forward. So we'll see what they end up doing with those sports if they bring them back down the road. But as of right now, it makes some sense.
Yeah. And it's kind of the same problem you're going to see with the smaller conferences like the MAC, the Sun Belt. they're struggling financially. And when you see big programs also struggling, that means not great things are coming, unfortunately. All right. Northwestern's November 7th game against Wisconsin was originally slated to take place at the Chicago Cubs Wrigley Field. The game is still slated to take place, although it's going to move to Northwestern's Ryan Field instead. And in a little bit of recruiting news, UNC recruit Tony Grimes said he plans to reclassify and graduate this summer so that he can join the Tar Heels for the upcoming season. He is currently the top-rated cornerback in the 2021 class and number 7 overall. So that would be pretty big for UNC, yet another big recruit for them. I believe that last time I checked for the 2021 rankings, they were 3rd behind Ohio State and Clemson.
This will probably drop him a little bit since he's reclassifying to 2020, but yeah, you know what? Still getting him. I saw some speculation since he was the top corner that it's for him to try to get to the NFL just a little bit quicker.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The quicker you can go get paid, the better.
Yeah. And if there's no season this year, or if there's a limited season or whatever happens, him just being on campus, obviously he probably would have rather been there in January, but him at least being on campus, getting some snaps, getting some the reps against, you know, high level opponents, especially because UNC does have some guys at wide receiver that he can get some reps up against. It'll help for next year when you start going into Sam Howell's junior year, which, you know, they could be making a real push.
Yeah. All right. That's all the news we got.
Awesome. Gibble, remember when we talked about Athletes Tea Club?
Yeah.
So did you go look it up at all? I'm going to take a wild guess you did not.
No.
Okay. Well, it's actually pretty simple. So when you register, because I'm going to force you one of these times, it's really simple. Their athlete designers come with a unique design every month, and they put it on a shirt to match. They try to change it up so you never get anything that's the same. Sometimes you get T-shirts, long sleeves, polos, hoodies. You never know what you're going to get. High-quality stuff, never 100% cotton. Here's how it works. You pick a sport. I know we all know that you love soccer. So, you know, you can start getting all your soccer stuff and wear it around whenever you want, just not around me. And you can change it every month. So once you get tired of soccer, because I know you will, you can change it to football or baseball. You know, they might even have some rugby or weird stuff in there. Choose your size. And then once a month you get it. And don't worry, they'll throw in extra stuff for you every so often too. A little bit of surprise in their package.
Ooh, that sounds ideal. So
use Athletes Tea Club. Use promo code WALKON. Get 10% off your next order.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and get into the American Conference, American Athletic Conference, I should say, into the preview for that. We'll run down through the teams. We won't spend a ton of time on this, but they are the premier group of five school. So, why don't we start out? We'll just run down alphabetically here. We'll start with Cincinnati. Cincinnati Bearcats, I believe, went 11-3 last year. And they return three of their key players, Desmond Ridder at quarterback. They get a big upgrade at left tackle in James Hudson, a Michigan transfer. And James Wiggins, their star safety, is back after missing 2019. He was a star for them defensively in 2018. So my big question with them is, I think they're going to go as far as Desmond Ridder takes them. The big question here for them is, can Desmond Ridder stay healthy? He's had some issues in terms of staying on the field in recent years. So I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on, especially with this team. My other question for you guys on Cincinnati is, will Cincinnati ever be fun to watch?
No.
No.
No, they're the Michigan State of the American Athletic Conference. So they're going to win games. It's not going to be exciting. They'll win them like 24-16, some weird number. And their points will come in the most boring way possible. It'll be a 18 play, 75-yard drive where they just take forever to get down the field. My biggest question is, they play at UCF. If they had UCF at home, I'd feel a little more confident, but there was speculation, know, before their Nebraska game was scheduled, like, could they go to Nebraska and win? Because, you know, they were coming off a 10-win season. You know, they're returning a lot of guys. Ritter's coming back. You know, there's a lot of people thinking that they would be able to go to Nebraska and win. And if they did that, they were going to put themselves in a really good position to be going in undefeated towards the end of October, beginning of November.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of preface pretty much everything I'm going to say is based off of the lack of fans. So one thing I've learned watching soccer, every game is anyone's game, no matter how good or bad the opponents are, because of the lack of fans. In college football, that's especially important, having that fan support behind them. So Cincinnati versus UCF, that particular game, that game can be a lot more of a toss-up this year, because UCF is not going to have as many fans backing them up. The atmosphere is going to not help them as much as it could have in the past. So I think that it'll level the playing field for a lot of people. That being said, Cincinnati still doesn't play exciting football. If their running game continues to be strong like it was last year, with Jared Doakes and Alabama transfer Jerome Ford, if both of them can come in and kind of replace Michael Warren and his production, I think that will take pressure off of Desmond Ridder. Definitely help him to not have to kind of make as many plays himself. Hopefully keeps him healthier in that aspect. So, yeah, I think you're going to see another quality season out of them.
I think their defense will be good. Lou Fickell's a very defensive-minded coach. I think they'll be probably the top defense in the American. To me, the question of how many points can they consistently score?
Yeah, and I mean, I see there not a ton of hype behind them, but as a mid-round prospect, I don't see it with Ritter. I'm not the biggest fan of his, but we'll see. He is good for that defense in terms of matching what they do. It is a good team. They will be good again. They return 13 starters, 5 on offense, 7 on defense, and 1 on special teams. So it's going to come down to that. I think they're going to have a good offensive line, obviously getting the Michigan transfer and Hudson in there. But yeah, it's going to come down to the running game, because that's what they focus on mostly on that offense. If they can pound the rock on offense, they're going to play good defense. They're going to stranglehold some of these high-powered offensive attacks that they're going to see in this conference. So Cincinnati is in for another good season as well. All right. Anything else on Cincinnati before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Let's go to the East Carolina Pirates. Couple key players on this team, Tyler Snead, a small 5'7" speed wide receiver who really fits this offensive heavy scheme. This passing scheme, Deontay Smith, their left tackle, who's probably going to end up being a mid-round draft pick next year, should everything pan out for him, and Xavier Smith, their linebacker. They return 15 starters, 8 on the offensive side of the ball, 5 on defense, and 2 on special teams, their punter and their kicker. Last year, this team went 4-8. They continue to play a high octane offense. They're going to be boom or bust on that side of the ball, but they need to keep scoring early and often to win as many games as possible. My question is, can they get out of the basement of the American Conference this year, or is it going to take a couple more years for them?
I think they're still a couple years away. They haven't had a winning record in over 5 years. I don't know if this is going to be the year that they do it. Not confident, you know. Back, I think it was 2014, they ended up getting ranked, and you know, they would end up firing their coach, I believe, the year after that. And they've won a total of 13 games in the last 4 years. I'm just not sold on them, you know, getting to a winning record this year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think they've made some really good progress. I mean, last year, looking at their schedule, they didn't get really blown out in too many games. only a few of them that I see here were actual blowouts, but the rest they kept relatively close within single digits. I think that's a good sign for them going forward. If they can build on that and turn some of those really close games into wins, they could get back to like a 500 record. I feel like that's a good goal for them for this season. But I don't see them being a big contender in the American, I don't know, at least for a few years, if anything.
There's too much talent at the top end that they're not able to compete with right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like I said, I think the offense is a little too boom or bust. They are high powered, but they aren't as consistent, I don't think, as an SMU or a Memphis on that side of the ball to minimize the bad defensive play. So I mean, they're gonna have to score in this conference. You have to score for them 40 points a game almost for them to compete in and out every week against some of these teams. So
yeah,
I don't necessarily see it either. All right, let's go to the Houston Cougars, coached by Dana Holgorsen. They returned star wide receiver Marquez Stevenson, as well as some pretty good defensive talent in David Anina and Grant Stewart, their defensive end and linebacker, respectively. They also returned 16 starters, 8 on the offensive side of the ball, 7 on defense, and 1 special teamer. After a disaster that was 2019, obviously they lost De'Aaron King. He transferred out and only played for the first couple games. But they also lost both their offensive tackles and Jared Williams and Josh Jones, one to the draft and one to transfer. How can Houston kind of get back to prominence in the American? It was a really weird season. They obviously have maybe the best coach in the conference in Holgorsen. But they definitely needed to make a pretty big step up from their 4-8 season last year.
Yeah, they gotta get that offense rolling. Last year, I almost kind of don't count that because you're planning on De'Aaron King to be your quarterback, and then after 4 games, he was like, no, I think we're gonna redshirt, and then obviously he ends up transferring. So last year felt like, you know, they need to take a mulligan, restart this year, and they got to come out hot. They got to come out with some swagger, because when they were rolling back, you know, when Tom Herman was there, you know, they came out each week and they just felt like they were going to win the game. And it just feels like they might've lost a little bit of that. You know, when a couple of coaching changes, you know, you have a guy that's won some big games. So I think Holgorsen can get them back to that. The question is, you know, are they going to be able to consistently do that? Like you said, you know, Stevenson, they've got some talent there. It's not a question of do they have the right guys. I think mentality is going to be one of that, because they should be able to compete with the UCFs and the Memphis and the SMUs. They should be a top 2-3 team every year. They're in Texas. They're in a hotbed. You know, they do well recruiting that area, even though, you know, Herman was really good at recruiting that, but Holgorsen's pretty good too. They should be able to be at the top just by recruiting Houston area. I don't know if they're going to be a top 2-3 team this year, but in my opinion, they should.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have the returners on both sides of the ball, the returning starters at least. They have 9 guys coming back on offense and 7 on defense. That at least gives them, I guess, consistency to start. Bringing back all those returning guys, you're not going to have quite as much turmoil as losing De'Aaron King and the centerpiece to your offense. So they can get started on the right foot and hopefully just continue that through the season. I don't expect them to go pop off and be a top 3 team, like you said, Jake, but I still expect them to do better than the 4 wins they had last year. They have the talent to do it. So I think they should probably be in the middle of the American, if I had to guess.
All right, let's move on to the Memphis Tigers. Your reigning champions in this conference. new head coach, Ryan Silverfield, he coached in the Cotton Bowl last year against Penn State. They returned 15 starters, 6 on offense, 7 on defense, and 2 on special teams, or kicker and punter. Key players, all offense, baby. Brady White, Kenneth Gainwell, and DeMonte Coxey. Gainwell is a Heisman dark horse going into the season, a young back. Memphis just keeps turning out these running backs in and out. Also turning in and out head coaches. They did it with Fuente. They just did it with Norvell. Now Silverfield comes from the same line here. Obviously, the offense is going to be electric. They're really fun to watch. Their problem was when they got to the Cotton Bowl against a team like Penn State, who plays in a bigger conference, they could not stop with the rushing game. They had problems with it all season last year. Can Mike McIntyre fix the defensive issues, especially in the running game? Obviously, they score so fast a lot of the time, so it's hard to think that the defense is going to be great because they're on the field so often and without tons of breaks. But I think they need to at least elevate that defense a little bit more to be a top team. But I do think they have so much talent on offense that they're probably going to sit in the top 25 all season. But what do you guys think on that?
Spoiler alert, I have Memphis winning the American this year. They just have so much talent on offense that it's going to be tough for other teams in the American to stop them. And even if they slow them down, I still think that they're going to, against good defense, I still think they're going to drop 30, 35 points. And if you have just an okay defense, they're going to be pushing that 40, 50 per game. So Kenneth Gainwell is a monster. You know, he's one of the top running backs in the country. You know, look for him to be pushing that 2,000 yard mark this year. So I really like Memphis this year. I really like what they're bringing back.
Yeah, I mean, having Brady White and Kenneth Gainwell back is massive for them. Obviously, huge production last year. I think defensively, they returned 2 of their linemen. That'll help to slow down the running game of their opponents. But I think the expectations are pretty high for Memphis after last season. Yes, they couldn't really stop Penn State, but they were still able to score against Penn State, which is definitely
something. Penn State had a good defense last year.
Yeah, and they were able to put up some points on them.
Granted, I don't scored what, like 40 points in the Cotton Bowl?
Yeah, I think it was a high scoring game. It wasn't really super close ever. I think Penn State had a handle on it for the majority of the game, but Memphis gave them a good run for their money.
Penn State, I think, had like they were always 2 scores ahead, it felt like. Yeah. Like yeah. Memphis would score, and then like Penn State would be up 14-7, you know, 21-7, 21-14, so on and so forth.
Yeah, so I think it wasn't like a close game, but Memphis stayed in a position where it forced Penn State to continue putting up a lot of points on them.
Well, actually, the second half, it was 35-30, 35-33, 38-33, 38-36, 45-36, 45-39. So it was a one-score game until 6 minutes left in the game. I mean, the first half, it was kind of blow up, but the second half, Memphis put it together in the third quarter and was within one score for all of pretty much 6 minutes of the second half. So they were able to. They just weren't able to eventually score. They kicked like 4 field goals in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, either way, I still think Memphis is one of the top contenders for the American this season, if not one of the – they might be the best team in the
conference. I think you have to look at them at least as the favorite to win the conference.
Yeah.
That's yeah, fair. Especially with those 3 offensive guys coming back. You have the stability at the quarterback position. Brady White's in his 10,000th season there. Gainwell, who's a sophomore now. DeMonte Coxey, who's an absolute beast at the wide receiver position, especially in a conference like the American here where he can kind of feast on some of these corners. It's hard to say because this is a team unlike ECU where it's not boom or bust. You know they're going to put up points. It might not be 50 every game, but they're going to be on the verge of 30 every game. And that's a problem for a lot of these teams, especially in a conference that doesn't not a lot of these teams have a very good defense. But let's transition to a team that actually does have a pretty decent defense, although they are replacing a decent amount. The Navy Midshipmen. Couple star players in this team, Jamel Carruthers, a really good story last year. He got called up from the JV team as a plug and play and ended up being one of the best backs they had. Billy Honaker, who's a preseason American Athletic Conference All-American at right tackle, and Diego Fagot, a linebacker on that defense. They returned 13 starters, 6 on offense, 6 defense, and 1 on special teams. My big question here is, this is a team that's going to be affected more than most in terms of missing spring practices, because how is it going to affect Navy at the quarterback position going into the season? A season that who knows where we stand when this comes out, but it's supposed to start with Notre Dame. Obviously, Malcolm Perry left for the NFL after graduating this past season, who was an electric factory. They have Perry Olsen coming in, who is not nearly as athletic and not a great runner at the quarterback position, but had some limited snaps against Notre Dame last year. But I think this is going to affect the quarterback position a decent amount in this triple option offense.
Yeah, losing Perry is huge. Especially with running the triple option offense, because guys who have experience running that and doing so effectively, it's hard to find guys that are as good as that. You see the ups and downs with the Navy, Air Force, and Army teams because, you know, for the longest time, Navy was running the service academies and consistently winning the Commander-in-Chief trophy. And they've taken a step back. Army has been up there, and Air Force has also been up there as well. And, you know, with no spring practice, I'm not sure how well they'll do because they won't be able to have as much chemistry and whatnot. I think they'll be okay. I don't think they're going to do much in the American Athletic Conference this year, though. I think, you know, they just lose too many important pieces to really give themselves a chance to be up to the top like they were a couple years ago when they were in the conference title game.
Yeah, I agree. I think defensively, I think they'll be fine. Offensively, it's just where it hurts with that triple option. That relies on timing, and without having the spring to iron that out and get that cooking like they need to be a threat to pretty much every team. I mean, they gave Notre Dame a fight last year, so I don't expect them to be as good this year. I think lower half of the American is kind of where I expect them to fall. But that's mostly because of losing Perry and not having that time to practice. I think this is one of the schools that it kind of hurts the most, it not having the spring ball and as much prep time during the summer right now.
All right, let's move on to the SMU Mustangs. Returning starting quarterback Shane Bichelle, the former Texas transfer. Also a pretty standout offensive line led by Jalen Thomas and Reggie Roberson at the wide receiver position. They return 8 starters on the offensive side, 6 on the defensive side, and 1 special teamer. Can SMU get enough on defense to be a true contender in the American? I think they're just a little bit outside last year. A great season, one of the best season SMU's had since the death penalty, hands down. But I think their defense was just a little off, but they are knocking on that door of the Memphises and UCFs and Cincinnati's.
Yeah, we know they'll score points. Bucelli obviously was a really good quarterback last year. They were able to put up a lot of points. The problem is when, you know, they were playing in these high scoring games, they needed to get some stops and they couldn't. They just were struggling to get stops when they needed them to. And, you know, they lose a couple starters. I mean, usually the mentality, if you lose starters, it's a bad thing. But if you have a bad defense, sometimes losing starters can be a good thing if they weren't, you know, effective. But returning that many starters on offense is good. I'm not sold on the defense right now. I like what Sonny Dykes is doing there, but I'm just not sure this is the year they get the defense running. I think they're probably still one more year away, which sucks because they're going to lose Buscelli next year. Meaning the offense will most likely take a step back. I think they're going to be a really fun team to watch. I think you're going to see a lot of games where they're scoring 40, 50 points. But if they run into a formidable defense who can stop them, I think that's where they're going to really struggle.
Yeah, I agree. I think, in my opinion, Shane Buscelli is the reason that I have them as high in my rankings as I do. As far, at least in the American, I think he's just a difference maker on that team. They are going to continue to put up massive amounts of points each game, which I think is going to be the key to most of their wins. Like you guys said, their defense does need some help. I mean, just with a little bit of turnover, they were really aggressive last year. They ranked fourth nationally in sacks and fifth in fumbles recovered. Will they repeat that kind of production again? I don't think so, but they need to be making stops rather than just forcing turnovers. I mean, both are helpful, but they need to make a few more stops, stop giving up the same amount of points that they're putting up in some of these games. Because you can be in as many shootouts as you want, but if you don't have defense, you see it in the Big 12 all the time. The defense is what you need in order to be a top tier team. So hopefully they can get it together this year.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think with Sonny Dykes there, I don't think you're going to see a ton of difference on the offensive side of the ball with Lashley leaving. I'm more interested to see how Lashley leaving affects Buscelli, who he worked with pretty closely. A couple new offensive coordinators in there for SMU. So we'll see if that has any effect. But yeah, I mean, that defense is so boom or bust. They ranked 109th in the country last year in points allowed. They gave 52 to an FAU team that didn't have its head coach. Their head coach had just left. So going to need a lot of help on that defensive side to put them in that next stratosphere. All right, let's move on to the South Florida Bulls here. Not a ton of returning star players here. KJ Sales is probably the biggest name, the former North Carolina transfer. They do have a new head coach, though, in Jeff Scott, the former Clemson co-offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach. They will have an interesting quarterback battle here. The addition of Alcorn State quarterback Noah Johnson, and they also have 2019 starter Jordan McLeod and transfer Cade Fortin, also from North Carolina, coming in. They have 14 returning starters from last year, 6 on offense, 6 on defense, and 2 on special teams. What do you guys make of South Florida this year? They obviously disappointed and kind of fell quite a bit. Charlie Strong was ousted, got a new head coach in there. With some good ties to the Tampa area, especially with Jeff Scott.
I'm not going to watch a USF game this year unless somebody forces me, because I think they're going to suck.
You'll only watch the Temple game. That's about it.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident it will be USF. But I'm not sold. I think Jeff Scott is going to be a good coach, but year one with, you know, having no spring practice, it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be an absolute struggle because I just don't think the talent is there. I think the cupboard was left pretty bare, that it's going to take a year or two for them to really get it going again.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot of insights on USF, but I don't see them really making any kind of leaps and bounds in the conference this year, even if it's conference only schedules for them. I just don't see them making any strides, especially with the lack of practices in Jeff Scott's first year.
They gave up 210 yards on the ground last year, and they really haven't had time to implement new systems, you know, get everybody accustomed. Like when they play Memphis, Gainwell's going to run all over them. Like, I think a lot of teams are just going to run through them, and even if they are able to score a couple points, they didn't have a good offense last year and they didn't have a good defense. So I can't assume that all of a sudden things are going to magically change.
All right. On to Jake's Temple Owls.
We're going undefeated.
Altitude. Probably only win two games this year.
Shut up.
I'm just mad now that
we don't get to, that we're not going to be able to give Miami these hands.
Well, not officially yet. Until it's officially canceled, we're still going to whoop up on that ass.
We got to whoop up on our former head coach.
It is, former head coach, yes. Temple returns starting quarterback Anthony Russo, Ramon Davis, a running back, and Ifeanyi Meja. Defensive tackle.
Close enough.
Jake, I'll let you correct
me. I don't even know how to pronounce it, I'll be honest.
They have 14 starters returning, 8 on offense, but only 4 on the defensive side of the ball, and their kicker and punter. They face a similar issue, I think, to SMU. I think they have a potent offense, maybe not as strong, but they do have a bit of a lackluster defense going into the season. Typical Temple, I think they have a average to above average quarterback play, depending on the day. A pretty good running game, though. And my real question is, a defense that's already kind of there, how great is the loss of Quincy Roche going to affect the Owls defense, the reigning American Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, I think that hurts. I mean, we're pretty much known for defense, and I mean, we're never going to be a 40 point per game team. I think I don't want to say we'll reload a defense because we're Temple, but I think we'll be able to replace some of the guys. Replacing Roche is going to be tough because you just don't have another one of him lying around on defense. It'll be more of a combined effort on the line. I think that they'll be good enough on defense to win games. I don't think it'll be as good of a defense as they've had the last couple of years. They do return some key pieces on defense, especially the interior of that line. The secondary, we still have a couple pieces there that should be able to help. My biggest concern actually is Anthony Russo because he's had up and down games. They get Rial Mitchell from Iowa State, who's supposed to apply for the waiver. If he gets it, it wouldn't shock me if there's an in-season quarterback battle because Mitchell comes with some hype, mainly because he was in the QB1 show. Wouldn't shock me if he tries to push for that starting spot by midseason if Russo struggles.
Yeah, I feel like the offense has a lot of weapons. I think Mack and Blue did really well at wide receiver last year. I think Blue had a few games where he kind of popped off. And Ramon Davis also did really well at running back. Like you said, Jake, Russo is kind of the biggest question mark because he did have those up and down games. He was, when we saw him play against UNC, he really struggled.
He couldn't hit anything against UNC. He sucked.
Yeah. Sam Howell also popped off in that game. That was
insane. We still couldn't move the ball because of Russo.
Right. I mean, they put up, 7 in the fourth quarter in garbage time?
Yeah, it was ugly.
Not a great time. But the defense always is solid. They'll keep that team in games every year. I feel confident in their defense to at least make some stops and not be really blown out too often. It's just a matter of can the offense keep the defense off of the field and give them some time to catch their breath in between, or are they going to just go 3-and-out? Because I feel like it was either a 3-and-out or some long drives for that offense.
I will say the other key loss that isn't really talked about is center Matt Hennessy left early for the NFL draft, which is not something that happens a lot at Temple. Usually it's the guys who are seniors. Usually we don't have our center leave early for the draft. So you lose a guy with a lot of experience, a guy that, centers help the quarterbacks a lot. They can read everything, making the adjustments on the line. Replacing that could be a huge adjustment, especially with having no spring practice. So an underrated loss that isn't talked about a lot.
Yeah, I'll never forget somebody last year trying to say that Anthony Russo is a sneaky potential first round draft pick. I just can't.
I remember seeing that. I was like, who are you? Are you watching the same quarterback I am?
All right. Let's move on to my Tulane Green Waves.
Angry Wave.
The old Angry Waves. They returned 13 starters, only four on offense, seven on the defensive side, and two on special teams. So key players here, Patrick Johnson, who is a future NFL edge rusher, really the biggest name on this team. Also, Mikel Jones, a grad transfer from Oklahoma, never really played a whole lot there, but he was at Oklahoma, so there's got to be some talent there, which is good. My question here with this team, I think they're going to have a decent average defense, but how greatly is the inexperience at quarterback and wide receiver going to affect Tulane?
I mean, I think the defense will keep him in games. I'm just not sure how well the offense will. I like Willie Fritz as head coach, but inexperience at quarterback, we've stated it a bunch of times, having no spring practice, you know, it can't be stated about not having those and not being able to get the experience. Yeah, they can work out on their own, but, you know, having a coach right next to you, making the adjustments, you just can't understate that importance. So I think they'll be okay. I think the defense will do enough, but I just don't know if they'll be able to score enough points if they're struggling on days where teams are going to have potent offenses in the American.
Yeah, this is another one of those scenarios where having a new quarterback and losing spring practice hurts. I think that was probably their biggest question mark going into the season, and still is. If you don't give Jones enough time to prep and get comfortable in that offense, then you'll see that early on. You'll see the inexperience and lack of connections with his wide receivers and everything. So I think that I don't see them really progressing this season. I kind of feel like they're more likely to regress from the past few years rather than really make a charge for a title. They'll probably still win a few games that they aren't really expected to, but they'll also probably lose some that they should win.
Yeah, I like Willie Fritz a lot there too. I do think this is going to be a regressive year for them. Especially looking at the schedule, the more bottom tier teams from the conference that they're going to play, Houston, East Carolina, and Tulsa, from at least from last year, they're all road games. So it's going to make it a little bit harder. I don't necessarily expect bowls to happen, but even if they did, I don't think this is going to be a season that Tulane does. I think they're looking at probably five wins. Maybe they can get to six, depending on what schedules end up looking like, but I don't see a ton for Tulane this year. I think it's going to be a rough one. Moving over to the third two-syllable T team, the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes, returning Zach Smith and Shamari Brooks, two offensive, really good offensive weapons for Tulsa, as well as Zaven Collins, a future NFL linebacker on the defensive side of the ball. 13 returning starters, total 9 on the offensive side, but only 4 on defense. Here's another American Athletic Conference team that key firepower on offense. They did lose two very good defensive players to the NFL draft last offseason. I do think that offense, though, Tulsa could surprise a few teams. I don't think they're going to contend for the championship, but I do think they could end up being middle of the pack and kind of getting out of a rut.
I think Philip Montgomery, if he doesn't win at least 7 or 8 games, he's fired, because his last 3 years, he's gone 2, 3, and 4. I don't think progressing to 5 is going to let him keep his job. So he needs to get some significant improvements. This is on a 12-game schedule. If he goes 8-4, his job will be secure. If he goes 6-6, I'm not sure he keeps it.
Last year, they won games that they won a game they really shouldn't have. They beat UCF. I mean, granted, UCF was a little shaky last year, but they still beat UCF. They lost by 1 point to Memphis, and they held Cincinnati to 24, which is boring game anyway.
They also got still boat raced by Navy.
Yeah. So, like, this team needs to find their consistency. If they can do that, they can actually contend to, well, they could be a mid-tier, middle of the table team, essentially. I think they have returning all those starters on offense is definitely going to be a big help in putting up points in games and kind of keeping them in them. They just need to win some of those games where they, like the lower tier teams. I mean, Navy, it seems like a winnable game for them this year. I could see them progressing a little bit, maybe getting a 500 record this year, but I don't see them making huge leaps and bounds to make progress in the conference.
All right. And lastly, we have the UCF Knights returning Dylan Gabriel at the quarterback position, Richie Grant of stud at safety, and Otis Anderson, an all-purpose weapon. Amongst others, they have 15 returning starters, 8 on offense, 6 on defense, 1 on special teams. Ken, the real question here, after a long run of being great, they took a step back last year. Can UCF return to the AAC championship after that step back? What do you guys think?
They have the talent for sure. They have the talent. I think they have the right coach right now. Today I learned Randy Shannon is their defensive coordinator. Had no idea that was a thing. I think they have the talent. I think they'll be good enough. Question is, can they be consistent enough? You know, like you said, Gilbert, they lost to Tulsa last year. They lost to Tulsa. They got to avoid those slip-up games because not that anyone can beat anybody in the American, because there are some teams that just suck, USF. But, you know, these home and aways, having to travel, there's some trouble. There's some trap games in there for sure. So can they stay consistent? Can they stay focused and get there and not have a slip-up game? Because the talent is absolutely there for them to go undefeated.
Yeah, this is the team that I see not necessarily being affected by crowd noises, but being on the road. They lost all 3 of their losses came on the road at Pitt, at Cincinnati, and at Tulsa last year. Those 3 games, they're either not going to be nearly as hype or they'll have no crowds in them. So with that, I mean, that just leaves all the talent on the field. So UCF clearly has the talent to beat almost every team in the American. I think you'll see it on the field this year. They're not going to have those distractions and stuff. You're not going to see them influenced by the crowd noise. So those slip up games, I could easily see them being wiped away. And I mean, like I said, they have the talent to win pretty much every game. So I look for them to be at least a contender for like the conference championship this year, if not in it.
Yeah. I mean, I like Dylan Gabriel a lot. And they return a lot of really good speed weapons and McCray and Anderson on the offensive side of the ball, pretty decent offensive line, good defense, a lot of key players on that side. So speaking of that, who do you guys think wins the American this year?
So since there are 11 teams, I think they disbanded the comp or like the divisions, right? And then it's just they're going to do the Big 12 style, just take the top 2 teams.
Yes.
I believe so, yes.
I believe that's how they're doing. I'm going to go a little bit off. I'm going to take Cincinnati versus Memphis in the championship game, and then Memphis wins it. I think it's the exact same thing it was last year.
Exactly. So I was like a little bit off.
Well, since UCF, like, oh, there's a lot of people that have UCF winning it this year.
Yeah, and I'm one of them.
A lot of people have UCF winning it. I have Memphis beating Cincinnati again.
I think it's UCF over Memphis in the title game. And my main reasoning is I think the offense is maybe a step behind Memphis. Still pretty good. But I also think UCF is probably the most well-rounded team in terms of a high-powered offense and also a pretty good defense with a lot of future NFL players on it. So I think they have that. If Dylan Gabriel can take another step forward, I think they're going to be a big problem in the American. I think they're going to end up winning the American championship again.
So I have SMU making it to the championship.
All right,
then. Mostly because of Shane Buscelli. Really like him. He's going
to like a big year out of him then.
Yeah. I see him progressing this season and hopefully improving his draft stock. I have them losing to Memphis. However, I think Memphis and that offense are going to end up being too much for them. And we still have the question marks on defense for SMU. granted, by that time, we'll actually know how their defense is. But I still see Memphis as the better team.
So you think SMU is just going to score like 55 points every game?
Yep.
I'd watch that.
Exactly. There's not going to be crowds affecting them and getting opposing team stops on defense. So they can just score at will. And yeah, it's pretty much, it's going to be essentially the Big 12 for them. They're just going to score a million points. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and for just going forward, we got the American out of the way. Other conferences we'll spend less time on. The American just is a fun conference. Everybody watches. So spend a little extra time on them. They deserve it. But nobody cares enough about the South Sun Belt or anything for us to spend 10,000 hours on Texas State. So going forward, if you're upset about that, don't worry. That won't be the case. Now let's get into the ACC. We'll start again alphabetical order here. Boston College, they get a new head coach and former Ohio State defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley. Not a ton of talent returning. They have a pretty good offensive line with Zion Johnson, their left guard, Ben Petrola, one of their tackles, and David Bailey at running back taking over for A.J. Dillon. What's the hope for BC in 2020?
Win four games, honestly. Like, I mean, obviously their stretch goal was to make a bowl game, but there's not a lot there at Boston College right now. You know, you lose Anthony Brown. I'm just not sure that this is a quick fix. Boston College is a tough place to recruit to. It's a very tough place to find talent. You play some good ACC teams. I'm just not sure that you can be expected to win more than four games this year.
Yeah, I don't see they last year they went 6-7, 4-4 in the ACC. I don't expect them to do as well. I mean, I think you could expect a similar ACC record, but playing both Clemson and UNC, I feel like they're going to get dog walked in those two games specifically. And
do you say USC?
No, UNC.
Oh, I thought you said USC. I was like, they're not.
Well, no, they're going to stay on their side of the country. Also, they're not allowed to play each other because they have the same colors. So I think that's a thing. But yeah, I just don't see Boston College progressing at all in the first year under Jeff Hafley. I think long term, he's going to be a good solution for them and going to take them to better places. I think you'll see them getting winning records relatively soon with him. But first year, no chance. I think
I'd like to see if Phil Jurkovec gets cleared, I'd like to see what he can do at Boston College, because he was a pretty highly rated guy, went to Notre Dame, transferred. If he gets a waiver, I think this would be a really good year for him to get some experience since there's no expectations, because I think he can be a solid quarterback for a couple years for them.
Yeah,
I think Boston College is pretty much bottom of the barrel for the ACC this year. It's going to take some time. I think Hafley is a good recruiter. I think he's going to be able to get the Northeast kids there, what talent that is there, and down a little bit more. But, yeah, it's going to take some time. Losing your star running back is a big hole going forward. And, yeah, I mean, it's going to rely a lot on Jurkovec and what he can supply moving forward should he get the waiver. Still don't know if that's a thing or not. So let's go ahead and just get it out of the way. The Clemson Tigers, we're all picking them to win the ACC, correct?
Duh.
Okay. Heisman contenders, Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne at the quarterback and running back position. Star left tackle, Jackson Carman, who's a potential first-round pick in next year's draft. They return 13 starters, 5 on the offensive side, 6 on defense, and kicker and punter on special teams. My question, though, is this Clemson team, they're going to be good. They have 4 and 5 stars all over the defense. The problem is that they don't have the big name defensive players that they've had with Isaiah Simmons, Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins, those guys. They have good players. They're going to be a good defense again, but will the lack of the big name defensive players force a slip up for Clemson during the season in any game?
Yeah, their defensive line honestly underwhelmed me last year because they brought in a bunch of former five-star defensive ends, KJ Henry, Xavier Thomas, and they really haven't performed to the expectations of that you thought they were going to have, especially when they had that monster defensive line with Cleveland Farrell and Dexter Lawrence and all of those guys. But they did not perform, and KJ Henry, I'm pretty sure, didn't play much, and Xavier Thomas didn't have a lot of sacks. So they're bringing in more five-star defensive linemen, Miles Murphy and Breece. I forget his first. Yeah, Breece. So guys that, you know, if they aren't stepping, if the older guys aren't stepping up, these freshmen could come in and play immediately. So they have the talent there. They should be good. They still have Brett Venables. Like, they're going to be fine. My biggest question actually is on the offensive side, because you have the quarterback, you have the running back, you lose your top two wide receivers with Higgins and Ross is out for the year, and you only bring back one starting offensive lineman. Granted, you're left tackle, so it's important, but you lose a lot right there, and you have some inexperience. I mean, Armani Rogers played well, but after Armani Rogers, there's some question marks at wide receiver.
Yeah, I think defense, I think this is one where you're just going to see their talent come out all season. I think early on you might see them, I want to say slip up, but they might kind of do what they did last year where they didn't start out super hot.
Like UNC, where they almost lost.
Yeah, but I think that, like, they're going to have those games where they kind of underwhelm. People are going to start to write them off, and then they're going to flip a switch and just start murdering everybody. I feel like it feels like it's setting up to be that again, just because of the lack of practice. But once they get in that rhythm, it's just going to be the Clemson death machine running over people again. With Lawrence, I don't want to say he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, but he might be. He was the Heisman front runner along with Tua last year going into the season. Now he's the Heisman front runner with Fields. He got beat out by a phenomenal Joe Burrow, but that might have played on him a little bit. They lost. That was his first loss against Clemson or LSU in the national championship. They have something to prove now. So I think you're going to see them come out with some massive chips on their shoulders. Lawrence is going to be his Heisman expected self, I think. And ETN is just going to pop off as well.
Yeah, I think the defense, I think, will give up points. The problem is you're on year three of Lawrence, another year of ETN. I mean, these guys are only going to get better. I doubt they regress. And the problem there is they're going to put up 40 or 50 points a game offensively. They might have some trouble at the wide receiver spot. But, I mean, again, it's another position where Jeff Scott, their former offensive coordinator, recruited so well. But 4- and 5-star guys across the board there. It might take a game or two, but they start the season with Georgia Tech and then Louisville, who neither of those teams have a stellar defense. So I think they should be all right there. My question, one last thing, looking at their schedule, let's play the pretend nothing else gets canceled game here. Do they put 100 points on Akron, a team that went 0-12 last year?
Yeah, in the first half. They're going to be coming for that Georgia Tech Cumberland game.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't schedule a worse FBS team. And Akron's it. So
didn't Akron not fire their coach either?
I don't know. We'll have to wait for the Mac one to find out, I guess.
I don't feel like searching it, so.
Yeah, we'll figure it out in a couple weeks. But yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily think Clemson is going to slip up anywhere, but it'll be interesting to see, at least as long as Lawrence is there and ETN as well. And also at the running back spot, they're like 5 deep on 5-star guys. It's stupid. Moving over to the Duke Blue Devils, a bit farther down the block in the ACC, another team that I actually think is going to be pretty bottom of the barrel, right with Boston College. Not nearly as bad as they were from 2000 to 2009, but they returned tight end Noah Gray. Chris Rumpf, who's actually right there with Gregory Rousseau in terms of edge rushers this upcoming season. And DeMond, Filial, Johnson, their all-purpose weapon. Can the offense, which did not produce much, produce enough to kind of scratch them to bowl eligibility?
So I think Chase Bryce will be helpful there. You have a guy with experience there. I just don't know if they're going to win enough games. Chase Bryce isn't going to come in and light the world on fire. I think he's going to be a serviceable guy. I don't think he's going to be quite what like Daniel Jones was for them. I think he'll have a good season, but not enough to where he, you know, puts himself on an all ACC list, not like third team all ACC. I think he'll just be an above average quarterback, but they're just going to play too many tougher teams, and they don't have enough weapons to help him out enough.
Yeah, I don't really see them moving forward, really. I don't see them having more than the 5 wins they had last year this season. I mean, even if the out-of-conference game still happened, that's 3 wins. But I mean, maybe they'll squeak out 1 or 2 that they probably shouldn't. But I can't really see them. They might hit a 500 record. That'd probably be best-case scenario for them. But beyond that, I think that would be way too hopeful for this team. Just with the lack of practice, I think this is, again, a team that'll hurt them a little bit. Even though they're returning a lot of starters, I think that this is a team where the practice could hurt.
All right. Yeah, I think if for some reason nothing gets canceled, Duke can have 3 wins off the bat with that schedule. They at least don't have to play Alabama to start the season. But yeah, it's a tough road. Hinges so much on how Chase Bryce is. It was decent in trash time, garbage time with Clemson a few times. But beyond that, I do think they're more towards the bottom this season. Let's move on to Florida State Seminoles, my favorite. Tamorian Terry comes back at the wide receiver spot. Marvin Wilson, an all-ACC defensive tackle, and Hamza Nazirudeen at safety, who's somewhat similar to Isaiah Simmons, to be quite honest, in his build. 6'4 safety. New head coach there with Mike Norvell coming over from Memphis, a good get for them. They have 12 returning starters, 5 on offense, 7 on defense. They had a lot of issues on offense last year. James Blackman's back for what feels like his 10th season. They had a lot of offensive line issues. Cam Akers is now gone, so they have a big hole to fill there at the running back position. They have Terry back, which is good. Their defense looks like it's going to be good, but can the offense take a step forward to help re-elevate Florida State in the ACC?
I don't like James Blackman. I don't think he's that good of a quarterback. I think he's just very okay. I think Terry is a top wide receiver, you know, easily probably one of the top 10 wide receivers in the country. I just don't know if Blackman is enough to really get them over the hump. Also, Blackman's only a junior, meaning he still has another year left, and it feels like he's been there forever, which still
shocks
me.
Well, that's because he literally had to play like his very first game against Alabama that one year as a true freshman. So like, I think that's why it feels like I've watched him for 3 years. I love James Blackman. I never want him to leave. He's my favorite Florida State quarterback since.
Yeah, because he sucks.
Chris Ricks. Exactly. granted, Hornibrook was in that game a lot last year. I forgot about
Hornibrook. Their defense also was bad last year. They were 90th in total defense, 119th in pass defense. So they've got to make a lot of strides forward. Running back is going to be a question because you lose a very, very sturdy guy. Good one.
One of the best running backs in the country last year.
If Akers had gone to a better school, he would have been a much bigger name.
If he would have just gone to a school that had something better than white sheets of paper at the offensive line slot, he would have been a bigger name. I mean, he had nothing.
It was bad. He was having to pretty much block for himself while holding the ball. So it wasn't good. Terry should have another good season again. Norvell is going to need another year or two for this one, though, because he just needs to get Blackman out of there. Supposedly what I read is it's not Blackman's job yet, that they're going to potentially give some of the newcomers this job, but Blackman's going to probably get the first start of the first game of the year. And then if he struggles, you know, maybe they look to make a change.
Yeah, I mean, once practices start, then you'll be able to see if there needs to be a, well, you'll see the point when there needs to be a QB battle.
Oh, I can tell you there needs to be a QB battle just by watching last season.
It's more of when they see it internally.
Because I disagree.
Blackman owns the record for most passing touchdowns in the Independence Bowl. It's 4.
I do now.
the fact I didn't need to know, but now here we are.
Yeah, it's a sad reminder that Brock Purdy's brother went there. He's the backup quarterback this year. Who
isn't it Chuba Purdy?
Yep.
Great name.
Should have stuck with Louisville. I'd have been okay with that. Still in the ACC, but I'd have been fine. But nope, the Purdy family lives and dies with Brock. We don't enjoy the rest of the family because they go to rival schools. But yeah, I think Norvell is going to make the team a little bit better. They'll be back to a bowl game this year. A lot of it comes down to discipline on defense. A lot of guys playing out of position last year. They have talent there again. Wilson, Zero Dean, and a couple other guys. Sante Samuels Jr., I believe, is there too. There's talent on the defense. They just have to get it together. That's the big thing for Florida State moving forward. They have to have a better offensive line. I don't know if that's going to happen this year, but I think they're going to be better than last year. It's hard not to with the talent on that team. Moving on to Georgia Tech, they return star running back Jordan Mason, as well as star cornerback Trey Swilling. How improved will Georgia Tech be in year two under Geoff Collins?
I think they'll improve, but not in the win column, if that makes any sense. I think they'll play teams a lot closer and maybe steal a game or two, but I still think they're another year or two away. You know, you made a severe change in offensive scheme that instead of them losing by, you know, 21 points in games, I think they lose by 7 or 10. I think you're going to see improvements that you just won't see it in the win-loss column. You know, they bring in another really good running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, who should get some snaps this year. A lot of people are high on him. Georgia Tech people were very high on him. I think he could start this year or at least be in the rotation this year. So I think you'll see some improvements, but I'm not sure they're going to get more than, you know, 3 wins again.
Yeah, I feel like we got this as a listener question before, like what the expectations for Georgia Tech is this year without spring ball. I think it's low. I don't see them winning more than 3 games either, just because they don't have the time to practice and get used to the offense, still transitioning from a triple option. Year two would have been better. I think they're still going to be losing those games. I think, like you said, Jake, they're going to be closer, but I still don't see them picking up many wins, if any, especially if it goes to conference only. I think they're still not going to be super competitive in the conference.
I think their best bet is them going conference only, quite honestly, because they have UCF on the schedule. They have Georgia, obviously, which could still get worked out to be a game that's played, but they'll keep Notre Dame if they go to conference only. But that out of conference schedule right now is not good. Gardner-Webb, which is notable because they lost to Citadel last year. So, it's not great. All right, let's move on to Louisville. Javian Hawkins returns a running back who I think is a Heisman dark horse. Tutu Atwell at wide receiver and Mikael Cunningham at quarterback. A lot of offensive weapons on this team. They do lose Mekhi Becton on the offensive line, who was an absolute road grader. 15 returning starters, 8 on offense, 7 on defense. I do think this offense can compete with any of the teams in the ACC. Minus maybe Clemson, but I do think the offense is good enough to put up points on Clemson. I do think they're going to have to make some big time improvements on defense. Obviously, the game last year against Kentucky, where they ran one play and they could never stop it against Lynn Bowden. Do you think that this defense is going to end up taking another step forward Also, this team gave up 6 touchdowns to Jaren Williams, and he's playing at a community college this year. So,
I mean, they better hope it takes a step forward. It was really bad last year. I mean, on opening night, they gave Notre Dame a run for their money. I think they'll be better. The offense will definitely be good. The defense, they really just need to start stopping the obvious thing. Like, how do you just let Lynn Bowden run the same play 30 times and you don't realize it's coming anymore? Like, Lynn Bowden didn't throw the ball very much. You knew he was running the ball, and somehow he just ran all over you. You know, they were 12th in defense and had 6 games of 500 yards or more on defense. So if you can cut that to 1 or 2, that should be enough to help you at least win an extra game or two. So, I mean, I think they should be, but I don't know. I'm not sold.
I think another area they need to improve on is that offensive line. They surrendered a sack on 11.1% of the time on standard downs last season.
Oh, so 1 out of every 10 passing plays they gave up a sack. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was the highest rate in the ACC and ranked 128th in FBS.
Well, there's only 129 teams, so.
They're doing very poorly in that spot. So I think that's something they really got to work on, getting that percentage down just, I don't know, in half at least, to be in like a better.
In half, just go down 3% and you'll give up a ton less sacks.
Well, yeah, obviously. So I think that's another area they need to work on. If they can get that, I don't see their defense really taking major strides forward or anything. But yeah, that offensive line got to get some work done.
All right. Let's move on to the bane of my existence, the Miami Hurricanes. Obviously, De'Aaron King, a quarterback Heisman contender coming in from Houston. Brevin Jordan, a tight end, a future potential first round pick, and Gregory Rousseau, who had about 15 sacks last season, as well as a couple other stud defenders here. Only 10 returning starters, 5 on the offense, 4 on the defense, and also the punter. A lot of that is also sort of because of transfers and all that. Moving around. The two questions I really have: will Rhett Lashley's high-powered offense prove to be successful in year one? And knowing the defense is probably still going to be pretty good, especially with huge upgrades on the defensive line, will the offensive line show much-needed improvements from the disaster that was 2019?
Yeah, the offense was awful. They allowed 51 sacks, the most among Power 5. But good news, all of them are back. So this is an example of they were really bad, but is it a good thing that the really bad people were back? You hope they make improvements with that much people, that many guys back in the chemistry. You hope that it is. I mean, even if they don't, you know, make insane improvements, but if you go from 51 to 30-35, you know, you're dropping 15-20 sacks, it's a huge help, especially for a guy that's going to be very mobile, De'Aaron King. But let's not forget Tate Martell is also there. Can't forget about Tatham. Had to throw him in here.
He needs to start.
Exactly.
2021.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to win the Heisman one day. Just watch. Might be better than De'Aaron King. Not even might. He probably is. But anyways,
bold.
The defensive line, I'm huge on Roche Russo, and everybody keeps forgetting about Jalen Phillips, who I think is also going to be an absolute monster for Miami because he's the former number one overall recruit, had some injuries at UCLA and sat out last year, and so people kind of forgot about him. He is insanely talented, and you have 2 other guys in there that are going to wreak havoc. What I'd love to see them do is put all 3 of them in on pass rushing downs and just let them go to town, because like offensive lines will be scared of that because of you won't be able to double team any of them. You know, Russo is going to probably have 15 plus sacks this year. Roche again is going to be looking at 12 to 15 sacks. You know, they're going to get to the quarterback. My question is the linebackers, because at linebacker, they must replace 99 combined starts. So it's going to be unproven. The defensive line should help that by relieving some pressure. But I like where their defense is at overall.
Yeah, I am really excited to watch their defense, actually. I think that's going to be a very, very fun unit to watch, especially those linemen. That's just terrifying already. Derek King on offense, if he has protection from that line, I think that he's going to do really big things for Miami. He can be a game changer. You saw it at Houston before he had the injury, obviously. But and last year, I'm pretty positive that I had Houston winning the American because of him. Clearly, that didn't happen. But he's a phenomenal player. The wide receivers on the team aren't really proven, but I think with De'Aaron King throwing to him, I think they'll still be fine. They just need the help of that offensive line, who gave up nearly 4 sacks per game in last season. Only team worse in the ACC was Syracuse. So not great. If they get that down, then they'll be in much better position going forward.
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be good as it normally is. Especially, obviously, like you said, with the edge rushing of Rousseau, Phillips, and Roche. And then also interior there with Nesta Jates of Silvera coming back. The offensive line, the biggest issue was mainly a lack of starts. They had true freshmen starting on the tackle spots, so on and so forth. I think Garen Justice, who came over from UNLV, is going to help that a lot. Zion Nelson, who started at left tackle for most of the season last year, was an undersized two-star prospect who they brought in mainly to as a progressive guy who, over the course of a couple of years, when they put on weight, they thought he'd be more like a four-star tackle. But unfortunately, had to start right away, and you saw that against Florida. And that kind of is what derailed it. I think the offensive line is going to be a little bit better. They got a couple key transfers there with Jared Wilson coming over from Houston as well. And with Lashley's offense, it's something De'Aaron King's familiar with that style already from playing at Houston for a couple years. So I don't think that's going to affect him too much. Obviously, Brevin Jordan coming back is going to be big. I'm a big fan of Cameron Harris. I think he's going to be very good for them at the running back spot. And yeah, like you said, the wide receiver spot needs to pick up, but I think this is an offense that fits them a lot more than what they've been running. So I think that'll play into their hands. It's going to be really interesting to see, because it's one of those teams that is going to go anywhere from, you know, 1 to 2 losses to 6 losses in a full slate of games. So who really knows? I sure as hell don't. I do really want to see this team play this year. So it would be nice if the season could actually still happen. Also, another big thing for them, they finally had a good punting game last year with Lou Headley, the tatted Aussie kicker. But they also got Jose Borregales from Florida International, who made 250 yarders on them in that upset game, which should fix the kicking spot, which is a big reason why they lost a couple of those games last season. So that is a small thing that I think is going to be a pretty big upgrade for them as well going forward.
In regards to your kicker, you either live long, or what is the saying, the Batman saying, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yep. It's amazing too, because he pissed off the Miami players, because he was celebrating after every damn kick, and turns around and now he's there. And his younger brother, who's a 3-star kicking prospect, I think, is also committed to Miami to come after him. So that's a nice little thing going on for them. So that's a small thing that is actually a pretty big thing in regards to how the team played last season. Now, let's get over to the team with the highest amount of hype possible, the North Carolina Tar Heels. They return Heisman contender Sam Howell at the quarterback position, Michael Carter at running back, a couple stud wide receivers, as well as linebacker Chaz Surratt. 16 returning starters, 10 on offense, 4 on defense, and 2 on special teams. My first thing is, after a 7-6 season, remember that they only went 7-6 last year, folks. They lost to Appalachian State. This team has huge expectations because of what they're doing on the recruiting side of things, and also with Sam Howell at the quarterback spot. My question, though, is, can Mac Brown match his recruiting effort on the field with his coaching effort?
I think he has a good surrounding group of coaches with him. So I think he's doing well with it. They lost all of their games last year by 7 points or fewer. So they were in everything. They lost by a total of 26 points last year. So they were in every single game. I think some of that would be the inexperience. Some of that is Mac Brown. It was his first year back coaching. I think there was a mixture of things. Now, I don't expect them to go in, you know, reverse that and win all of those games this year, but a couple small adjustments, a little bit more experience, and I think they turn that from 6 into 3 losses, for instance. I like what they've got. They return a ton of guys on offense. They should be the second, in my opinion, I think they'll be the second best offense in the ACC behind Clemson, because Clemson just, you know, Godzilla. So after that, we come back down to norm a little bit. I like what they're doing. You know, they're setting themselves up well for the future. I've said this on Twitter a lot that Mac Brown is going to set them up for success. It's going to be who is hired after them if they can keep them going, because Mac Brown's not going to be there 10 years. Mac Brown's probably going to be there another 5 at most. So I don't know if this will be the year they really, you know, push for it, because I think next year is the year they really push for the ACC title, just because Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne will be gone. And Sam Howell will be a junior, but I think they can set themselves up to progress nicely.
Yeah, one of the games that I really want to see played is UNC versus Auburn. I would love to see that game somehow still happen. If they go to conference only, that would be one that goes away. But that would be just a great judge of how both of those teams are stacking up. Both of them are kind of on the rise. They have 2 sophomore quarterbacks at each university now. So I think this offense for UNC should come back and be just as good, if not better, than last year. Losing one starter is kind of absurd. So I think that's why the expectation is so high on UNC. They had lose one starter on offense. If they can put up any kind of production like they had, then they're going on to bigger and better things. And let's not forget, they lost to Clemson by trying to go for 2. So they could have easily won that game. If that play had gone slightly different, they win that game. So they're in a really good spot to build and improve on where they were last year. Also, assuming the schedule stays the same for them, they play UCF week 1. So that's another big game where they can kind of see how they stack up, because UCF is a very good team that I think they should beat and hopefully would in this scenario. But yeah, I expect them to be, if like in contention for the championship in the ACC, if not in it. So.
All right, moving over to their rival, the NC State Wolfpack. Not a ton of returning big names here. Zonovan Knight, their running back, is probably the biggest one. 17 returning starters, though, 9 on offense, 6 on defense, and 2 on special teams. My real question here, I don't think we have very high expectations for NC State this season. I think they won 4 games last year. Even amid the COVID pandemic and teams likely not to fire coaches, how hot is Dave Doran's seat this season?
He should be fired just for hiring Tim Beck as his quarterback coach. Like, honestly, Tim Beck was awful at Ohio State. Then he went to Texas, was awful at Texas. So what do? You hire an awful offensive coordinator, quarterback coach to take over your awful offense. I'm sorry, you should just be fired for making that hire. You were 107th in scoring offense last year and didn't score 4 touchdowns in an ACC game last year when the ACC was down. So Dave Doran's getting fired. Like, there's nothing he's going to do this year that's within expectations that keeps his job. I don't think they make a bowl game. They don't have a lot of talent there right now. It would stun me if he is still the coach next year, if they play.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of promise for me. I mean, granted, they return a good amount of starters on offense, but nobody on defense, not having practice, bringing in a pretty awful offensive coordinator. I just don't see nothing in that lines up for me to see them improving on last year. So I kind of expect them to be just bottom of the barrel.
It wouldn't surprise me if they were the worst ACC team this year.
Yeah. And that's behind a Georgia Tech team that doesn't know how to offense correctly yet, and a Boston College team that's very uncertain.
Yeah. I'm not saying they will be, but it wouldn't shock me if
they
finish with the fewest wins in the ACC.
All right, moving on to the Pitt Panthers here. They have a couple studs on the defensive side of the ball, and Jalen Twyman at defensive tackle and Paris Ford at safety. I think their defense overall is pretty good. Questions are going to come on the offensive side. 17 returning starters, though, 8 on offense, 7 on defense, and kicker and punter. My big question is, can Kenny Pickett take another step forward? He has at times been impressive and at times been depressive.
Incoherent.
Also, to note, they have the best wide receiver group name of all time, or at least of the season, Tazier Mack and Shockey Jacques Louise at the wide receiver spot. So good for Pitt. Saw him play last year. Again, pretty decent defensive team. I think if the offense can come around a bit more, I think they could surprise some teams in the ACC.
Yeah, Narduzzi is usually really good with the defense. The question has been his entire tenure is, can he put a formidable offense together? You know, they lose their two top rushers and their top wide receivers, so that doesn't bode well for Kenny Pickett with experience. You know, I'm not sure that – I think Kenny Pickett could take a step forward, but the lack of experience on the offense there, you won't see it as much. I think Pitt is going to do what Pitt has done the last 4 or 5 years and be a formidable opponent, not really get blown out too often, not score a ton of points, kind of what Narduzzi has been known for since he got there. So I think they'll be good. They could shock a team, surprise a team, but then they could also lose to, you know, like Boston College or whatnot. They're just middle of the road team for me this year.
I think that's just Pitt in a nutshell, honestly. They win games they should. They lose games they shouldn't every single year. Like, they're the team that just keeps pulling off stupid victories. Kenny Pickett, he should be pretty good again. He did average 258 yards per game in the air, which was somehow higher than Trevor Lawrence. But he also had an extra 62 attempts. So he's just throwing the ball a ton, and Lawrence's completion percentage was higher, and total yards was also higher. Otherwise, I think Pitt is a as usual. I think they're just a middle of the road expectation. They're never going to wow you, but they'll win games they should or they shouldn't, and lose games that they also shouldn't.
All right, moving on to Syracuse here. Tommy DeVito returning at quarterback, Andre Sisco at safety, and Andre Smite at kicker, one of the best kickers in the country. 11 returning starters, 6 offense, 4 defense, 1 special teams, with that being Smite. Can Syracuse get back to where they were in 2018, or are they going to struggle again in 2020?
I'm not sure. Syracuse is a team that always confuses me. When they went 10 wins, I was confused, and then I thought they were going to be better, and then they sucked last year. I think they'll be better than what they were last year. I'm not sure they'll be what they were. You know, when they went 10-3, I think the, you know, on a 12-game schedule, they're looking at 7 or 8 wins. Dino took a step back, and, you know, I think a lot of people had more expectations for them. I think that they're going to take a step forward. You know, they're going to run the 3-3-5, it looks like, on defense, which, you know, hit or miss sometimes depending on, you know, who you're playing. The ACC doesn't have a ton of guys slinging it around. There's a lot of dual threat quarterbacks in the ACC. So I think they'll take a step forward, but again, I have no idea.
I could see them taking a step forward. I think what might have been a problem for them last year was that they were very, very hyped, and I think the hype got to them. They came off of that, 10-win season.
Yeah, they got slapped around by Maryland.
Exactly. So, like, and that was a game that everybody thought they should have won, and that was also a Maryland team that I don't think it was Maryland overhyped at that point, too.
Yeah, Maryland came off. Maryland scored like 140 points in their first two games, and then didn't score 140 points the rest of the year.
Yeah, and then also got absolutely murdered by Penn State. Yeah, this team, I think they could improve on last year just because the expectations are not there. They're going to still have expectations for Tommy DeVito to be better and improve, but I don't think the pressure is going to be as big. So I think you could see them pulling off a few more wins. I could see them easily being like a 7-5 team if they're playing a 12 game schedule still. It wouldn't surprise me with their schedule that they have. I mean, they start off with BC and Rutgers. So it really wouldn't surprise me if they end up just middle of the ACC again, kind of get back to that spot.
All right, the Virginia Cavaliers returning Zane Zandier and Charles Snowden at the linebacker spot and Joey Blunt at safety. 15 returning starters, 6 on offense, 7 on defense, and both special teamers. I think Virginia is likely going to take a step back from where they were last year, but how far back do you think they fall, if at all?
Yeah, losing Bryce Perkins is huge. They returned 7 guys who started games on the offensive line. They added a Penn State grad transfer, Alex Gatterstedt. He sat out last year with a knee injury. They returned their top running backs, Wayne Talupua. I'm not going to try that one. And they also had 46 sacks, tied for 9th in the nation. So I think that they'll take a step back. They're obviously not going to make the Orange Bowl again or the Sugar Bowl, whichever one they played in. I think they'll still make a bowl game. I think they're still formidable to have an above 500 record. Bronco Mendenhall is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated coaches in the country. Has put together some pretty good classes there. There is some talent behind the guys who left. The quarterback play is going to be the big question for me this year.
Yeah, this is probably one of the few teams in the ACC so far that have had the QB turnover. So you could see that affecting them, especially early on, especially with Georgia right off the top of the schedule. I could see them taking, I think they're definitely going to take a step back. I don't think they're going to just completely fall off, but I don't see them having a 9-win season again. That just feels like very high expectations for an unproven sophomore quarterback. I think they'll end up probably middle of the road, if not like higher in the ACC.
7-5, 8-4, I think is where they're going to be this year, depending on how some things go.
Yeah, that feels about what they should expect.
All right, the Virginia Tech Hokies, a lot of star power on defense with Rashard Ashby at linebacker, Caleb Farley and Jermaine Waller at corner, maybe the best corner combo in the country. 20 returning starters overall, 8 on offense, 10 on defense, 2 on special teams, kicker and punter. How will the Hokies fare on defense with elite talent, but without Bud Foster for the first time since 1995?
Yeah, that's the big question about not having Bud Foster there. I mean, that was the staple of their defense. You know, he ran all those different defensive fronts and would know how to adjust. You know, obviously one of the best defensive coordinators of all time. They haven't had defensive linemen finish with 5 sacks in the last 2 seasons, so they're going to need to get some pass rush in there. Hendon Hooker comes back, needs to work on a little bit of passing. Mobility is there, and if they can get Rutgers transfer Heem Blackshear immediate eligibility, that would help him a lot. I think the defense will be good enough because I forget the guy's name, but he is a protege of Bud Foster. So first year, you could see a couple hiccups, but I think overall they'll still have a solid defense.
Yeah, I think that is one of the benefits to a defensive coordinator turnover right now. You have all of that experience coming back. Looks like you only lose one starter from the previous season on defense. So that's going to be huge. This is a team that could end up squeaking into the 9-4 kind of range, or 9-3 range in their conference schedule, just because of the experience coming back. I feel like they should expect about where they finished last year. Nothing more. I don't think they're going to be, I don't think they're the team to beat in the ACC, in the Coastal, but I think they have the talent to win some games they shouldn't maybe this year.
All right. Wake Forest, Demon Deacons, return wide receiver Sage Surratt, Carlos Basham at the defensive end spot, and Nasir Green from the safety. 13 returning starters, only 3 on offense, 9 on defense, and 1 on special teams. And Nate Skiba, the kicker. How impactful will the loss of Jamie Newman be on to the offense?
I think you'll see an impact, but Sam Hartman is expected to be a starter, and he started games before. So I think you'll see an impact, but I don't think it'll be as much because it's not a brand new starter, a guy who doesn't have the experience. Hartman should be able to take over, but I don't think he'll be nearly as good as what Jamie Newman was for them last year.
Yeah, and he still has Sage Surratt to throw to. So I feel like that's a massive advantage for him coming into the season. You have a kid who can essentially grab any ball and just make plays. Sage Surratt is an incredible talent that I think is, he was good to have kept around while Newman transferred. I think it having him there is going to be big for that offense. Defensively, it looks like they return enough guys to stay consistent and essentially do the same or have the same production as last season. So I expect them to kind of finish about where they did this past season.
Yeah, I think I said it before, but I think Dave Clawson is probably the most underrated coach in college football. He's consistently getting Wake Forest in that talent level to bowl games year after year and not really getting a look at for bigger jobs, which is always kind of surprising. I'll take it. The longer he stays at Wake Forest, the better it is as a fan of that school. But yeah, like you said, Jake, Sam Hartman comes in. He's started games before. I don't think it's that much of a drop off. Jamie Newman was good last year, but a lot of that is a lot of the hype on that is potential. Sage Surratt's going to help a lot there too. A lot of returning defensive guys. I think Wake Forest is going to stay middle of the pack, above average, like they always are, and continue that, especially with a good defense going into the season. Now, lastly, because when the ACC announces they're doing only ACC games, Notre Dame is going to be a part of it to answer all 30 people's questions about this. So we're including Notre Dame here with the ACC. Ian Book returns at quarterback, Kyle Hamilton at safety, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah at linebacker. Big thing, Tommy Rees is the new offensive coordinator. The guy that was there for a decade as the quarterback now takes over the reins at the offensive coordinator spot. Coached the offense in the bowl game last year against Iowa State. 14 returning starters, 7 on offense, 5 on defense, 2 both special teamers. How will a likely move to a full ACC slate affect Notre Dame this season?
I think they'll be fine because they normally play 10 or 11, or usually about 10-ish Power 5 teams. So I don't think it'll be that much of a difference because they play USC and Stanford and Wisconsin. They already have 6 ACC games. So that based off of just those right there, they already have 9. So they're used to playing in a tough schedule. So I don't think it'll be that big of a difference. Potentially it could get easier depending on which ACC teams they have. So I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think they're going to – they might actually make out a little better, potentially a few easier opponents than Wisconsin, Stanford, and USC. So I think it could end up working out a little bit better for them.
They were already scheduled to play Clemson anyway, so this doesn't change anything. But depending on what else right. they draw, you know, their schedule could actually get easier.
Right.
I think the schedule will get a little bit easier. I think they'd still end up losing to Clemson. But like I said, I think they'll probably end up taking on Miami at some point. And without looking, a couple other schools that might have had Pac-12 or Big Ten games, at least so far. They'll probably end up folding into that too. So I think the schedule will be a little bit better not having to play USC, especially Wisconsin's kind of a toss up there too, but we'll kind of see as that goes forward. I think it's better for them. Again, I don't think they'll likely play a full schedule. They will not be eligible for the ACC championship game, as it should be. But speaking of that, who do you guys have losing to Clemson?
I mean, you just spin the wheel of, you know, the other half of the conference because everybody's won it over the last 7 years. I mean, I don't know. I'll take Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I got UNC. I got Sam Howell taking them to the ACC championship.
Yeah, I'm going to take Virginia Tech. I like Hendon Hooker at quarterback. I think he brings some mobility that works a lot with that. And that defense is just so good. My big question with North Carolina is how good that defense is going to end up being this year. And I think Virginia Tech's offense is going to be good enough to propel them by North Carolina. So I'll take Virginia Tech as well here. Actually, you know what? No, I want to be different. I'll take Miami, even though I don't actually think they're going to win, just to give us three different ones here.
I'm glad we all agree that Clemson will be undefeated, though.
Yeah, I don't think any of these teams are going to stop them. I mean, could they? Sure. I think there's enough talent in the conference that one of these teams could get them to slip up if they don't play a perfect game. But or if one of their opponents plays a perfect game, I think they could beat them. But I don't see it happening. But yeah, I think Virginia Tech's probably the best bet to win out of that side of the conference with that stellar defense. All right, Jake, I'll send it over to you for our final advertisement.
Yeah, so Gibble, you know, you got your shirt. We all got our shirts from Smack Apparel. Smack is one of the leading unlicensed college and professional sports apparel company in the country. They put the designs and the slogans that you are thinking about, you are reading. They don't need a license because they use their own logos. They use their own phrases. Make sure to check out Smack Apparel. Use promo code REDSHIRTS. Actually, promo code WALKON for 20% off your next order. My bad. Read that wrong. Use 20% off your next order. Make sure to check out smackapparel.com. We have two listener questions here. We'll roll through them really quick. The first one is from It's Dibley. Will Virginia Tech beat UNC? You already kind of led on to this, Folsom, but you believe Virginia Tech will beat North Carolina?
Not necessarily. I think North Carolina might beat them in the regular season. I think Virginia Tech will end up winning that side of the conference because UNC might have another loss or two. But the game is at North Carolina. I think that heavily favors North Carolina. Depending on the fan situation, if it's no fans are there, I think maybe Virginia Tech will end up winning that game. But North Carolina is a pretty difficult place to play if you go at night and there's fans in the stands, but and the team's good. So I think a lot hinges on that. If there's no fans in the stands, I think Virginia Tech will beat them.
Yeah, I have UNC winning that game. If it's just talent versus talent, I chalk that up to UNC. The lack of fans can definitely kind of – it hurts without the environment. Granted, that would give UNC an edge in that game even more than they have, but I think just straight talent versus talent, I'd take UNC to edge it.
Yeah, I think UNC is better talent, but I don't know. I like Virginia Tech's ability to win games they shouldn't and come out and surprise people. So I'll take Virginia Tech in that game. The other question we have is actually about the American. This is from James Sanford. Do you think the American is the only G5 conference that can survive going conference only? Folsom, you'll take that one first.
Yeah, more than likely. I think they draw enough from TV and stuff like that, that they could probably survive on their own. I think they're exciting enough. Everybody likes to pump action and stuff like that. But in reality, those games, if it's not on a Wednesday in late November, nobody cares. Whereas the American Conference is on ESPN every week, always a staple there, always on Thursday nights. I think they draw enough that they could survive on their own, but yeah, I mean, Sunbelt couldn't, I don't think. Or
Mountain West is a maybe for me.
Mountain West is, it's there. They could, especially
Boise the might be enough to keep them afloat, honestly.
Yeah. And the star power you get from Wyoming.
Not at all.
I'll tune in for those games. Don't worry. Mountain West, continue, do your thing. Conference USA. Yeah. Another one I don't see. So yeah, more than likely.
Yeah, I agree. I think American is the most likely to survive. If there was a second, it would be the Mountain West, just because of, mostly because of Boise State. Plus, you can kind of pack them in with the Pac-12 after dark. If you have late games for them, you might get some viewers not watching the Pac-12 games, because, you know, they're on the Pac-12 network and you can't actually see them unless you subscribe to the Pac-12 network.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't think it does. So I think that's how that one could survive. But when you're the Wednesday, Thursday night games for the MAC aren't going to be quite enough to keep it alive. And I can't think of a time where I've watched a actual Sun Belt conference game that wasn't Appalachian State playing a notable team.
Man, yeah. You gotta watch Louisiana games, man. Raging Cajuns.
Yeah, the American, I think, is the only one that they have enough money, because there's some big name schools in there with Houston, SMU, Temple, Cincinnati, Memphis. You know, you have some schools, UCF, you have schools that actually maybe don't profit, but don't lose as much money as some of those other schools, where it's worth for them to go out there and still get their brand out there. I've said this on Twitter, if it goes to conference only, the MAC's not going to play. I can almost guarantee that. That's not off any knowledge, just off me knowing the MAC's losing too much money. They're cutting too many sports at a rapid pace that they can't afford to play conference only, because nobody will watch, especially if they try to do weeknight games, especially with baseball and basketball and football and hockey all going to be going at the same time this fall. You are not going to be able to compete in Akron versus Northern Illinois game, a Miami, Ohio versus Central Michigan, no matter what day of the week, no matter what time you play. Those will get trashed by every other sport, where they realize it's not worth them to play. I don't think Conference USA plays, because I can't tell you last time I watched a Conference USA game. And the Sun Belt, same thing. You know, they just won't be able to survive. I think Mountain West is the only other one that potentially could, especially if they're able to convince BYU to join for one season, because BYU has all the Mormon following, the Mormon support. Boise State, you have enough schools, I think, in that area that could potentially get it. The problem is the Cal State school said they might not go back to school, meaning it would be tough for them to get the San Diego State, San Jose State, and Fresno State to play, which could essentially eliminate them from playing this fall anyways. That's all the questions we got.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, folks. Again, the rest of these are going to be a little bit shorter, not focusing as much on the the group of five divisions. We'll probably touch on them just lightly, and then mainly on the big conferences. So look for that moving forward. Next episode will be Big 12 and Conference USA. And I believe that'll be next week. We're back on a weekly schedule, hoping college football comes out in time. And we'll update you guys with all the news of the week and our thoughts on it as well. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Walk On Redshirts Podcast. And make sure you subscribe. Give us a 5-star review if you're on Apple Podcasts to get us up the ladder a little bit. Tell your friends about us, all that jazz. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.